F1A, number 20A.
Today we want to start with showing how from a blunt biblical text we can arrive at the matrix. The whole process of how from a simple, straightforward biblical text on the prophets, we finally can arrive at what we have as the Christ matrix on page 20 in the Minor Prophet book. So what I want to do is to show you the step-by-step unfoldment of how to go about the text in order to decode the text and see its structure. The matrix is nothing else but a representation of a structure. And we know that today we should not be thinking anymore in atomistic truth, but in a structural consciousness. In structure where we find relationships between the individual truths, and not just the blunt individual truths, isolated ideas. All these ideas must finally be gathered back into the one principle, so that every part of the subject is related to the one principle, and therefore in this way can be harmonious, because the moment they are related to each other, they act harmoniously. So let's say, as a starting point, that we have never read the prophets as we have been considering them up to now. Let's go out that you open for the first time the Bible, and at one time it was always the first time that we opened the Bible and began to read the prophets. So let's start out from that point. And how would we read now the Bible? Or we reduce it now to the prophets so that we have some kind of a foothold and pinpointing things much more clearly than if we talk in a general way. So we read the prophets. How would I go about it? I would first try to read what is in the Bible literally, and try to understand literally what the prophet wants to say. This is not always very easy, because in the Bible that has been written 2,500, 600, 7 years ago, we naturally encounter a symbolism that is no more common to us. They were using their symbols, and their symbols were mostly connected with their history, with their political history, with their military history, connected with the social environment of how the kings were ruling, how the churches were ruling, how the priests were ruling, how corrupt they may have been, about the social environment, the poverty, the relationship of master and servant, and all these things. We would have to know quite a bit also about Jewish theology, so as to understand what happened there, going after other gods, why they went after other gods, how they did go after other gods, what was the reproach in it. So we would have to know quite a bit of the surroundings, the historical background of the prophets. That we can learn quite a good bit by using a good Bible commentary. There are various Bible commentaries, and you can look up there what these various situations were. They give quite good indications of the situation at that time. So that in this way one could at least first have a clear concept of what the letter of the prophets was saying. Then, when we know how to read it clearly and can make a clear picture of the text, then naturally comes for us the more important point, namely to find the spiritual meaning behind the symbols. We know that all the text is symbol, and that spiritual teaching has to be done through symbols. So from that point on, we are faced with that great task of translating symbols into metaphysical ideas. Now, this is a long step. It is not so easy to do that. So first of all, we would try and read, say, a prophet through in order, first of all, to get an overall impression of what the prophet wants to say. As one reads it through and ponders it without any other purpose than just to feel the general message of it, then we do that in the best way by reading the prophet through and through and through until we somehow feel the impact of a prophet. Say, if we read through, as we have done, Obadiah, then we very soon will find out that the main point is how Esau must be brought down, brought low, and how Jacob must be exalted. Things like that. Or when we read Jonah, we have seen that it is a question of reformation against rebellion, against a mission. Or whatever we read Zephaniah, and we hear constantly that he is destroying, 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 destroying everything that is unlike God. So that in this way, as a first attempt, we get a general feel, a general impression of the whole prophet. And this is very important. It is not so that we should try and read a verse and a second verse and try to see what that verse may mean metaphysically. This is what is done usually by the student, that they take verse by verse and translate it into a spiritual meaning. And that is not the right method, because it goes out from tiny little bits before one knows what the whole is. The modern way of interpretation goes always first out from the whole. We take a whole as big as we can do. Naturally, the whole would be all the prophets. But there then we see that this is impractical, because all the prophets together as a whole and say what do they want to show would mean that we would have to read hundreds and hundreds of pages that cover the prophets. So the practical way is to take just one book first and see, can we see somehow the general meaning, the general idea that is expressed in one book, like Hosea, like Joel, Amos, and so on. So to take a book in the Bible, first of all, as a whole, though we know that it is not the whole, that it is part of a bigger whole. But the practical side is that we must take a text that we can oversee, so to say, that we can fathom, and where we are not getting lost after 5, 10, 20 pages. So, in our case, we would take the text of one of these prophets and read it and listen to it spiritually. See, at the moment the letter has been set straight through reading the letter and through concordances, Bible concordances, and having put that straight, then the spiritual work begins. Then the letter must be exact as possible, But then we have to listen spiritually. And so we have to listen spiritually first what the whole text or the whole book of a prophet really has in view. And as we read that and say, yes, I get now the general feel of it, the general touch of it. I said the feel of it because we are not yet quite sure if we have touched the right tone. That must always be in a question mark. And just go out from the hypothesis that we have felt the right tone, that tone may be right. And then we can go and say, now, can I see if that tone runs right through a prophet? Can I see how he depicts that overall tone of a prophecy in various ways? How he unfolds that subject. Now, this means that we are going to check, so to say, our own findings. If we have said, Zephaniah is always the one that talks about destroying and wiping away and consuming and so on, is that a subject that is carried right through the whole book of Zephaniah? And so we start all over again and read the text again, trying to see the spiritual interpretation of it and see how he describes this destruction. Is he always saying the same thing? And so you come to a very important question in text interpretation, where you always say to yourself, why does a prophet need, like Zephaniah, a few pages to say always the same thing? Why can't he say that in one verse? Why can't he say just in one verse, I, Zephaniah, I'm a prophet, and I prophesy that God will wipe away everything that is God unlike? Period. Why doesn't he just say that? Why does he use so many words, so many examples? And that's the main question. Because then you ask yourself, does he vary that main idea? Does he vary that main idea that God destroys everything unlike itself? And so we read the text and begin to see, yes, he actually does vary it. He shows very different aspects of what he has to destroy. And from that moment on, we are then using the question, do I see certain breaks within the text, within the subject? Can I see where he takes an example and then suddenly makes a break and takes a completely different example? And so we read the text again and make a note for ourselves where the subject breaks. We say we look out for the breaks. The breaks are what? When we talk about the breaks are what? It is there where we feel, and I say feel because we just don't know yet by sure, where we feel that the prophet has dealt with a certain aspect and then suddenly goes over to a quite a different aspect. So that there is a differentiation there. A break is a point of differentiation between what has gone before and what is coming next. So it was always finding differentiations which help us to understand the prophet. Differentiation is the precondition for understanding in every science, not only in spiritual science or the science of the Bible. So we read again that book and make a little note, perhaps with a pencil first, because we are not quite sure, and indicate where there is a break, and go on reading, and we feel there is another break, and we make a little mark, and so go through the whole text. Then, when we have done that, we may not be quite sure that our breaks have been done rightly. Because as you go on, you perhaps suddenly you find that something repeats itself, just as we had there in Zephaniah, that we had in the subtone of mind, the spirit worship and false worship, and then it went on, and then suddenly we had another break, and we began to talk about worship and false worship again, so that we can see that sometimes our breaks may not be clear, may not be the right breaks. And so you weigh a text constantly. Can you see? It is not a matter of reading a text once and then you have it. It is a spiritual listening to the tonality of the text and finding out first the big breaks, the main breaks. That's important, so that we don't start right away and seeing, well, here is mind, there's mind, and mind, the spirit, mind, the soul, and so on, and perhaps go astray then, and we expect that mind as principle must come, and then we interpret something into the text which is not there, just because we think it must then be mind as principle, and then mind as life. These are the mistakes that are being made. We always must see that we don't put any interpretation into the text. We do not interpolate, we interpret. If we interpolate, that means that we put something in the text that is actually not there. And that is naturally a wrong method. So in reading the text, we must have a completely unpreconceived mind. We should not approach a text and say, well, in that text must be the word order, or in that text must be the word order in the subtones of the seven subtones, or that text must be the seven in the Genesis order. Everything that has a preconceived notion about the layout is not the right mental attitude. The mental attitude is always that we are blank in our mind and let the divine mind interpret itself to us. So that we can say, I don't want to see in a text what I want to see in a text. And that is a very important mental attitude. Because if we don't do that, then we make a text fit to our concept of what should be in the text. Whereas the text that is written is a revealed text. And that revealed text is a text that God has written, that the divine mind has written. And the prophets and the writers of the Bible and the textbook are only channels, are only window panes through which the light shines. They are scribe under orders, so that actually not those who wrote those texts were those who knew being, but they were listening to what being was telling them. So our right attitude is therefore that we approach a revealed text with a prayerful attitude which says, not my will be done, but thy will be done. Not my concept will be seen, but God's own revelation of itself must be seen. And I begin perhaps first by being at one with the divine mind and say, if I am one with that mind that wrote the text, then I can also understand that text. And so I always feel before we read a book, the Bible or the textbook, we should have that inner attitude that we have not a mind of our own, but that we are one with that mind which has written originally the text, with the real author of the text. And as I can be one with that mind, and the clearer I'm one with that mind, the clearer I can hear the message of the text. So we let always the text speak to us, and not we interpolating in the text our own conception. And as we weigh now this text according to the big idea that we have perhaps first felt in it, we begin to see clearer and clearer as we go through it again and again and weigh it in our consciousness and weigh it with our knowledge of the system. We weigh where a subject changes, so that perhaps finally we arrive at 7 breaks according to the text. But mostly we have now seen that the prophets, most of the prophets, deliver their message in the 7, some in the 4. So let's just, for simplicity's sake, say they are in the 7, and so we get 7 breaks. And when we have done that, then we feel already now much clearer, much more distinct, and much more defined within ourselves how the story runs. What is the build-up of a story? We usually perhaps see at the beginning the proposition of the prophet, then the development of the proposition through spirit, soul, perhaps principle, life, then coming to the end, to the answer of the proposition, the resolving of the proposition in truth or in mostly in love. So that suddenly we begin to get a story. Now, the moment we have a story, naturally we get a kind of an order. And if we get an order, we know that this is helping us to understand the text, because order is already the first step of seeing something clear and clear-cut in a presentation. Now, in order to define that order or that story, what shall we do? Once we have felt those breaks, I said felt, then that feeling must be made more definite and see, is it really so? Is that feeling right? Did I have enough spiritual sense to detect the breaks? Now, if I had that, then we must prove it through the scientific sense. Spiritual sense alone isn't sufficient. And I must have a proof through the scientific sense. How do I do that? I begin then to translate the biblical sense of the first break into metaphysical ideas. Instead of seeing mountains and hills that are flattened down, I see the power of God. For instance, instead of all those various symbols of how they prayed to the stars and to the moons on the top of their houses, I see there in false worship. And so I can slowly, step by step, take the biblical symbols out of the biblical connotation or language and put it into metaphysical language. What we can do, therefore, is to put those biblical language, in those metaphysical ideas, which we know from our study of the synonymous terms. We know, for instance, worship, that has to do with spirit, and this is accepted knowledge and understanding, so that I translate from biblical language into metaphysical ideas, but into such metaphysical ideas as we know really from our life. So at that point, we translate already the biblical text into ideas which we know as ideas of our capitalized terms. So we approach step by step, so to say, the system of Christian Science and the language of the system of Christian Science. When we do that and translate it into ideas, and every break has then another epitome, so to say, in ideas. Perhaps at the beginning we just have one word or two words with which we define each break. Then when we have done that through the seven tones or the seven subjects, we can say now and to ourselves, now, does this order make sense? How can it make sense? How can I see if it makes sense? I can see it by going just one step further and say, now, through what synonymous term are these ideas exemplified? If I have in the first break power, then I can say this is an idea of mind. And I notice for myself, here is mind. I go further and have perhaps seen in the second subject that it has to do with worship. Well, I know that's spirit, and I put down spirit. And so is the next, where all there is the joy of spirit, I put down soul, and so on. So that I have, that I translate now metaphysical ideas back into their synonymous term to which they apply.